Today, at the Worldwide Threat, we're going to discuss a very important episode called COVID and the Coming Pandemics by an expert in this field, Derek Gilliard. Derek is an activist, historian, and writer who worked with the last five presidential administrations in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Is it about the economy versus the loss of life? We're about to see some of that impact again, perhaps on steroids. These are all these things I could never say while I was in the government.
Valuable and free information from experts are contained in the short 7 to 15 minute podcast. We want to help people understand the various end time threats and provide real time solutions along with the tools needed for the friends, families, and businesses to survive. Followers of our channel can receive a free action guide on each topic weekly. We hope that these guides will help people prepare for the serious threats we all face at this time in history. Hey, Derek, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, John. Appreciate being here.
I'm telling you, it sounds like you had an amazing life dealing with COVID and threats. I can't even imagine.
It was something else.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in this kind of service and what kind of things you experienced during COVID. If you can, sort of step by step so my audience can kind of get a feel, because your governmental experience is something everybody doesn't see every day.
Thank you, John. Yeah, I'll start with how I went to work for the government. I think you and I had talked briefly. Previous to that, I worked for Dr. King's organization, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I was the communications director. And like a lot of small organizations, they insured me, but not my family. So my oldest son was a senior. All of a sudden, he started having seizures out of the blue. He didn't take drugs. He wasn't playing football. So we couldn't figure it out. The medicine was extremely expensive. And so I had to go look for a job that had benefits for the entire family. And I happened to, only two times did I ever, and I don't even know if people get jobs through newspaper ads anymore, but only one of the two times I ever got a job through a newspaper ad, I applied for the regional office of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is the eight southeastern states. And this white liberal nurse in the Clinton administration said that her office needed to more directly reflect the people that we served in the eight southeastern states. And she hired me. And so that began my journey in 1998. And of course, there are 13 agencies within HHS. And at that point in time, all of those agencies that were in the eight southeastern states reported through and to the regional director. So that meant I did work with the FDA, with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, the Administration for Children and Families, all of these organizations, HRSA, which basically manages all the federally qualified health centers, where roughly 40% of the people in the country get their primary health care services because it's on a sliding fee scale. It's the Office of Minority Health. So kind of all of that, including the CDC, which we always call the 800-pound gorilla. Now, they really didn't listen to us, but they were that's part of HHS. In addition to, like, the National Institutes of Health and all these others. So it was a very broad swath, and so it was a steep learning curve. And that's kind of how I got started in 1998.
That's an amazing thing, it sounds like.
It also is a region that had, honestly, the most black people who were people who, in many instances, still there are the vestiges of slavery and Jim Crow. There was a lot of distrust in the medical field because of things like Tuskegee, but that's just one example. We had seven of our eight governors in the eight southeastern states who were not interested in expanding Medicaid, and so opening the door for more people. So it was, there were a lot of challenges there, and it was, for me, a great, you know, privilege to spend those 25 years in that office.
That's great. Did you write the book, The Longest 4 Years of My Life, based on your personal experience while serving in office during the COVID?
Yes. So that book specifically is focused on the Trump years because of, you know, the impact of COVID during that particular time. And of course, we're about to see some of that impact again, and perhaps on steroids.
Yeah, I'd like to hear, my wife actually asked me to ask you if, because of your experience, you actually see another pandemic coming.
I absolutely do. And the reason, I think, John, is because, I mean, well, look who his nominee is to run the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, who is a documented vaccine denier, because, you know, the strains of COVID mutate every year. And that's why for the people who get the shots, they suggest you continue to get them because they're protecting you from new variants of the virus. And so, yes, I'm really concerned, not just about COVID, but things like polio, which we had almost eradicated in this country. And so if we aren't vaccinating for that, you know, we could see a real resurge in even polio.
I tell my friends, I wish I'd have been smart enough to buy into Pfizer before it happened, into their stock, because we could all done something like travel and live on the beach. There's a lot of audiences. Well, some say they agree with it, and people we talk to, some say, well, they think they're off the grid somewhere. So because you're there and you just called them the 800-pound gorilla, I don't exactly know what that means. Why don't you explain that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, because they are so large, even though they're just one of our 13 agencies, they don't really they kind of do what they want to do to a large extent. For example, here in our region, so there are 10 regional offices across the country. And so in theory, the CDC director should work very closely with the HHS regional director, and we should have their buy-in like we would have with all of the other agencies. And essentially where we said we need something, we get that kind of positive response and report, but they just kind of flick us off like a fly on your, you know, on your shirt.
You better watch it. We're going out globally.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, guess what? Since I'm not in the government, these are all these things I could never say while I was in the government. You know, I just had to bite my tongue and the blood would come out of the corners of my mouth. But yeah, I, to be honest, John, I blame, I fought the CDC to a large extent for a lot of the issues that happened during the Trump administration, in the sense that I think Robert Redfield was the director, and he was being muzzled by the people in the administration. They were very structured about what he could and could not say, and I think that he would have been much more forthcoming and more honest about the danger of COVID when the president was choosing to believe it was just going to disappear and just some of these other issues. In fact, they had somebody in D.C. that was in the White House. His name was Michael Caputo. He had no health background, no medical background, and he would go through and censor things that were coming out of the CDC. So the people in the CDC felt, many of them who I know and knew, felt they were really being prevented from honestly, earnestly doing their job to protect the American people.
Well, all that insights, information, we're not really right or left on what we're doing. We're trying to reach everybody with help for whatever the threat is, be it COVID or we just had a gentleman, a black man that's got a ministry all over the country where he's helping the youth and helping black families figure out ways for fathers to become more prevalent in their lives. But the question that just went through my mind is, what do you think of Fauci?
You know,
I'll be honest, because I'm listening.
Yeah. So I know there are people who say he had some level of complicity in terms of allowing COVID to do what it did. And honestly, I don't know about that. I have not seen that proof, but I think he did his very best to warn and encourage the people to be prepared for the pandemic, about the serious nature of the pandemic. And I know that he got under the president's bad side several times, but he did it in a gentle way. So I think that Anthony Fauci did the best he could to continue to warn and educate the people about the serious nature, the dire consequences of COVID within the structure of the administration and continuing to keep his job.
Okay, that's cool. And another question I might have for you is that because of the mandates and the way things happened, all these businesses were shut down. In your experience, could you think of a different alternative that they could have come up with, or maybe you even thought about or heard about while you were in that service, that would have been better than shutting down all those businesses?
You know, yeah, that was a lot of what I had to deal with, because one of my jobs was to monitor all of the governors, what the governors were saying, and the big cities. So like, you know, Florida, they were going to stay open at all costs until it got really, really bad. And then finally, they did shut the businesses down. Here in Atlanta, our mayor said they were shutting them down. You know, there's pain either way, John. So I think that people have to it's kind of like a pick your poison. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe we need to have a system in place that says, okay, if your employees can't work, you can't pay the bills, we have a certain period of time where we're going to be able to support you, and we have that in place. We put that in place now. Because I think the question comes down to sometimes, John, is it about the economy and jobs? And I know that means feeding people, mm-hmm. versus the loss of life. And yeah. So it's a real not tough easy. Situation.
Yeah, well, the biggest flap I remember is that Amazon and Walmart made a lot of money during yeah. that time. They got to be open where the small businesses got hammered.
And so that's true.
That's a lot of drama. Plus, anybody that wanted to come across the border was coming across the border and weren't required to deal with the mandate. So that all goes into, you know, my thinking about it as well. But, you know, you're right. I think the preparation is the key. And we need to really think about that and hear from that, no matter who's in government.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, brother. Please tell us what you believe is the best way to protect our families and businesses from pandemics, in your experience as a government guy and a guy that's kind of a ministry guy. I know your wife's in ministry. So tell us what's on your heart about the best way to protect these people.
When it got really, really bad in 2020, mm-hmm. and there were a lot of people who said, well, we have to make a decision. Do we keep businesses open and the numbers are going to continue to rise and people are going to get sick and people are going to die? Or do we focus on, you know, closing businesses or suspending businesses, suggesting that people social distance, mask, and get vaccinated? At least go look at getting vaccinated. Of course, I want people to get vaccinated. Although initially I was very hesitant about getting vaccinated because, again, I'd seen people taken advantage of. And we need to educate people who are open to learning, pluses and minuses. We need to be totally honest. I really say, let's be honest. I always want our politicians, our medical people, to be honest with the people, because if people know what's really going on, I think we can come together, we can be a united front, and we can defeat anything, particularly if you're young and healthy. You know, it may end up being just like a bad cold to you, or it could be, you know, you may be asymptomatic. You don't even know you have it. You don't experience anything. But I think we want to make sure people are aware that if they get around the vulnerable, the elderly, people with pre-existing conditions and comorbidities, it's very likely that we could pass something on to them that will lead to either their deaths or their debilitating illnesses.
Well, what I saw personally was, it looked a little one-sided to me when it all happened, when we went through it, that one side of the argument was, well, everybody's got to follow our mandates, and we're from North Carolina, and these North Carolinians are a little different critters than some of the country. And so this following mandate deal didn't go down very well, and it didn't look like to me, now maybe you have a better take on it, that when anybody got interviewed that was against the vaccines or against the mandates of wearing masks when they couldn't prove that they really did anything, it just caused more division in the country. So I think your idea is a good idea, but it should be two-sided. Here's the pros, here's the cons, here's what the mask really does, here's what it doesn't do. And people like you, because of your experience, can really say things about that, and with education say, here's what works, it doesn't work. And I think as a voter, as an American, I would have preferred that over saying, well, just do what Fauci says or do what the government says, and nobody really had the game in. That's my take on it. Now, we might get a lot of hate mail on that, but whatever. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I agree with you. I think you want it to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
For example, there have been studies later, subsequently, that question the effectiveness of the mask. I don't think there's really anything that I've ever seen that questions the effectiveness of the vaccines. Now, I've seen people who point to outliers, point to situations. I mean, if you vaccinate 100 million people, you're going to have some people who have bad reactions and die there. But, I mean, and no, nobody wants to hear that, and that's terrible for that person and that family. But
it's reality.
It's reality. And there was a playbook that was left for him, because in my office before the pandemic, we were doing pandemic preparedness tabletop trainings about all the scenarios. And so, and then, you know, that was kind of discarded. And so that's kind of problematic at this point for me.
Well, what I can experience, because I've been in business for almost all my life, is that the shutdown of businesses wasn't the best idea, I think. I think it could have been done a little differently, but, you know, hindsight's always the best. But finally, my final question is, in about a two-minute recap, discuss the longest 4 years of my life and how my audience can simply prepare, kind of give us a detail of the book, and how they can prepare to receive peace over these kinds of threats. And also, you need to know that when we do the action guide, we're going to drive people to Amazon and to your link so they can get this book. Because what we're doing is we're looking for people like you that can kind of give a guide to help people understand what's coming. Like, some of the information you just gave us is really good. And the fact that you're looking at it from both sides of the equation really helps me to personally receive what you're saying. And we want people to really speak what's on their heart about this, because that's what works. So just in that 2 minutes, just give us your dissertation or whatever it is.
Sure. I think that, John, one of the things that I do detail a lot are the vulnerable communities that were most impacted here in the 8 southeastern states by COVID. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were in the rural areas, to be perfectly honest. Many instances, they were the less educated people. They were the people of color. They were the kind of poor and the working poor, you know, because and too often it was people who just believed one way or the other, but didn't really do any in any research and didn't necessarily know what to believe. And so I just have the opportunity to chronicle so many cases of, like, people go to a funeral, you know, and then 80 people catch the disease. And some of the places like Albany, Georgia, and Montgomery, Alabama were really, really terribly hit. And I just, so give people, I agree with you, give people all the information, let them make the decision, because you're right, we'll never go back. Well, in the foreseeable future, mm-hmm. of telling people you have to have it. And I think that was the problem, right? So there were places that said, if you're going to work here, you have to get vaccinated. And people pushed back against that. If we don't have people picking up our garbage, parking our cars, stocking our grocery shelves, serving our food, pumping our gas, you know, mm-hmm. our whole economy shuts down. And those are the people who are frequently the most vulnerable people. Pick all of our food and vegetables in the fields. So I think that hopefully we can think about them at least as much as we think about ourselves, because, you know, all of us are important. It's hard to put a value on one person more than mm-hmm. another person.
That sounds like your wife preaching, brother.
Well, you know, I do believe in justice and equity. And I mean, you know, hey, nothing that Christ talks about in the Bible more than justice, to be perfectly honest. So, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, it's in my blood, John. I can't help it.
That's great.
And, you know, I think that I think we should, as Americans, think about the least of these and at least give them a higher priority of condition.
Yeah, the Lord said the poor will always be with us.
That's right. He did.
And so thank you very much for spending your time. I know you're traveling this week. Have safe travels. I pray blessings for your family, and thank you for spending this time with us. And we really appreciate the expert advice you're giving us. And we're going to put this out soon. And blessings again, brother.
Thank you very much, John.
I hope you're blessed with this information. Please like, subscribe, and click on the notification tab to our channel. And we will send you advance notices about upcoming threats to be discussed. Remember to capture the free action guides via our QR code embedded in an episode at the end. As a registered follower of the Worldwide Threat Podcast, you have our permission to download and share every episode and free action guide with your friends, family, and other businesses. Each Thursday, we'll post a new subject for you to consider and discuss. Set your watch to watch and to download the free action guide. Thank you. This is John White, the host of the Worldwide Threat Podcast. Please check out everything we're doing, and blessings to you and your family.